Welcome to Wine About History. I'm your host, Max Hamill, and today we're doing our second mini episode, and also a little PSA for you guys. Our schedule is erratic, and I apologize that there, as a result of that, there's some breaks in publishing, and we're working on fixing with that. So today we're going to be talking about the Celts, or the ancient Celtic people. Because the Celtic people are still technically alive. But the ones we're talking about are the ones that were exposed in the ancient world and were from around 750 BC to 12 BC. They were the most powerful people in Central and Northern Europe. So there are lots of different tribes speaking a vaguely... They were kind of similar language, kind of similar culture. They would not typically identify them as Celts. They would see themselves as probably qualified as a bit different. Now, they had these reputations as warlike barbarians because the people they were around, and the ones we have the written records from, are Greeks and Romans. And Greeks and Romans really considered themselves to be civilized, and everyone else is a barbarian, which is very, very common in the world at that time. Now, the Greek historian Ephoros described the Greeks as one of four great barbarian peoples. He did this in the 5th century BC, and their name possibly comes from the Greek word keltoi, which I believe means spears. Now, once their many tribes, they stretched all the way from the Alps to Ireland to Spain. We're trying to focus on the British Celts because during March, we decide we do something a bit more Britain-focused and Irish-focused. And we thought we'd just run with that for a little while. And so the British Celts, who are descendants of those people. Now, the Celts are still around. The nations are the Irish, the Welsh, the Cornish, the Scots, as well as the French Britain's province of Brittany. Now, they're still alive. They're still around. Many Americans and many other people have Celtic blood in them. But it's not the same as these ancient Celts. And we're going to be focusing on them. So they were mostly rural society, dominated by farming and working with cows and livestock. And cows were considered walking gold. They lived in roundhouses in Britain. And these roundhouses were quite literally round houses made from wattle and daub, which is interwoven sticks covered in a mixture of mud and different other materials to seal the interwoven sticks shut so they would stop wind. And they were surprisingly solid structures. These roundhouses were typically up high on a hill, covered in thatch, which is straw, to stop the wind and rain and snow getting in. And high on these hills, they were behind a palisade and earthen wall, depending on how rich that society was. And the hill would often have fake earth walls and false pathways to confuse and stop invaders. I'm going to leave a link in the bio on how to make one. Now, their culture is kind of complicated, but they were great craftsmen and great warriors. In fact, the mere word Celt kind of summons up a blue tattooed barbarian waving a sword, although spears were far more popular. And their unique style and their art and their tools are still replicated today. It's those looping patterns with strange animal symbols. And their blacksmiths at that time were some of the best in the world. They excelled at making weapons and tools that were just fantastic, and everyone wanted them. Their steel quality was typically better than others. Now, there are Roman and Greek reports of swords getting bent and men having to step on them and bring them back, but that was not something that the Celts had to put up with. Another reason why they were so feared. They also are famous for wearing torques, which is a ring with a little gap, and often has some sort of decoration at the ends of these rings. And you put them around your neck or your wrist. And they were synonymous with Celtic culture. Not only were they decorations and status symbols, they also supposedly had some sort of religious significance, because you can see them in gods wearing them in their depictions of their religion. Now, their society was, like most of the time, it was structured. You had the king at the top, and then you had druids, which are their priests, warriors and noblemen. Underneath that, you had craftsmen like blacksmiths and artists and things of that nature. Then you had, somewhere in there, farmers, depending on which culture you're talking about. And then you had peasants, you know, farmers, and then slaves. And I just made a huge mistake because I forgot to mention what wine I'm drinking. This is why I always have a partner to remind me of what wine I'm drinking. So I'm drinking Apothic. Regular good old Apothic wine. It's one of my favorites. And it's their red blend, and I love it. Very high in acid, but some people like that acidy taste. Well, acidy mouthfeel. And it smells very good. There's a lot of fruit going on. I can't pick quite all of it out. I'm going to butcher every word today. I'm going to stumble over every single syllable. So as for the wine, I always recommend Apothic. On self flavor, I am tasting a little bit of pepper. A lot of subtle fruit hints. Very interesting. But we'll get back to that in a minute. So that was their structured society. And the Celts were famous for wearing beards, which the Romans and Greeks did not, unless you were a philosopher. The only Romans that wore beards and Celts and Greeks that wore beards were technically philosophers. Now, their lords and noblemen and kings never wore beards. They shaved it all except the mustache, and they would grow it out. I'll leave a modern UFC referee that wears that in that exact style. You would see exactly what I'm talking about. Now, their religion was, they were pagans, and there were lots of different gods and goddesses. There's famous Serranus, the horn god, and there was also Epona, which was a horse goddess that many men wore as a totem to protect them in battle, and they put lime wash in their hair that would actually stiffen their hair till it was solid like a rock and even allegedly provide protection from sword blows. Now, the famous druids, who they are, is they are the priests of the religion, and they were so powerful that they could walk through a battle without being touched by a single blade. We think we touched them a little bit in the St. Patrick episode. They were healers, advisors, they were doctors. They were every role that a spiritual person can fulfill. And cauldrons also take up a unique place in Celtic society because they are not just cooking. For those of you who know what a cauldron is, it's a big metal bowl that people cook food in. And you see them, you know, with witches and wizards have them in media. But they were also, in Celtic society, gateways to the universe, and sacrifices we placed into them by the druids and other important people. A very, very big part of Celtic society as well was the feast. Now, most cultures have some sort of feasting, but this was important because it helped put emphasis on their warrior society and the role of the lords. Now, the lord or king would throw a big feast, invite everyone in, feed everyone, give them food, and give them wine. In fact, wine had a big status symbol in Celtic culture because it was hard to get. They didn't know how to make it, so they would trade Romans for them. They would trade an amphora, which is a large clay jug, which can be anything from 3 feet to 6 feet tall. One amphora of wine for a single slave. And slave raids were very popular. The Celtic tribes would raid each other. The Germanic tribes, they would raid anyone they could for slaves, and they'd trade one slave for amphora, which was a good deal for both sides because they were never running out of slaves, and the Romans were never running out of wine. And the Lord would dole out this wine to gain favor with everyone. Another important part of the feasting was which hero and which warrior was the most important, because the most important warrior in that particular society got the first and best cut of meat, not the lord, because the warrior wanted to be fed, needed to be fed first. And any man who said the cut should be mine, no cut of meat, you know, the good thigh or this or that, they would literally fight to the death for that cut of meat. Get Apothic wine. It's really good. I'm not even asking for a sponsorship. I just recommend it as a nice table wine. So, the thing the Celts were most famous for, not just their art, not just their gods, the thing they were most famous for was war. And they were absolutely, without a doubt, some of the most ferocious warriors that ever lived. Now, they did not fight in organized lines and clusters and formations like the Greeks and the Romans, which is why the Romans slowly but surely conquered them, is because organized groups tend to outdo wild, ferocious charges. But they were still terrified of them because those wild, ferocious charges worked. Celts would work themselves up into a frenzy. It's called the furor, which is a spiritual battle frenzy. Many of them would fight naked with only their shoes on. Now, one of the reasons they fought naked, arguably, was because the last thing you want is a bit of dirty cloth in your wound. You know, someone cuts you, your dirty shirt gets in it, it's infected. But still, it wasn't just that. Naked men would fight in with a wild abandon in the first rank. They acted as skirmishers, and they would do suicide charges to open up gaps in the enemy line for the rest of the charge. And so the whole big part of Celtic warfare was not just their impressive skill, and many of them had schools, very good schools that people go to learn and to be very competent warriors. It wasn't just wild swinging. They were skilled at what they did. But it was psychological warfare. They were masters of psychological warfare. In fact, they had something called a carinx, which was a large, strange-looking trumpet. I'll put a link in the show notes for that as well. It makes a weird sound, kind of like an animal. Some of them make a sound like an animal dying. So they would make, and they, right before they charge, they would out this huge chanting scream. The Celts are also famous for singing in battle as they died. And then, so you have dozens and dozens of naked men charging you, and behind them are half-naked, wild barbarians, tattooed, screaming, working themselves up into a frenzy, and charging you en masse. It terrified everyone. Everyone was scared of them. And they were so scared of them, they were such effective warriors, that to this day, the Celts, most people, when they think of Celt, think of a blue tattooed warrior with no fear attacking the enemies. And here's a quote from Caesar himself. He was talking about the Nervi tribe at the Battle of Sambra during the Gallic War. Now, these are mainland Celts. They suddenly dashed out in full force and swooped down on our cavalry, which they easily routed. Then they ran down the river at such an incredible speed that at the same moment they seemed to be at the edge of the forest, in the water, and already upon us. So, for those of you who don't know anything about medieval warfare, typically cavalry trumps infantry. Cavalry, those know, is mounted soldiers on horses, infantry are men on foot. But these guys are such great warriors, they were able to overwhelm cavalry. Now, even without momentum, a cavalry unit, you know, the momentum of a charge, a cavalry unit is still a trained horse that will bite and kick on top of a man who is mounted and has more reach than his enemies. So part of their society, too, was these strict spiritual rules, you know, fighting naked, things like that. And as a result of that, they were not organized. They fought in family groups called the Fianna, which was the tight-knit extended family circle. And because they're so wild and disorganized, they were difficult to pull a whole army together to fend off the Roman conquest that eventually reached all over, almost all over the world at the time. Well, not the known world to us, but Asia, the Middle East, Africa, Europe. And bit by bit, the Romans barely defeated the Celts, and they actually never made it to Ireland. They didn't want to go to Ireland because it wasn't worth it. Because if they had left and attacked Ireland, all the Celtic tribes in the area were just waiting for an excuse to rise up against them. So if, and I know I missed a lot in this episode because the Celtic history, as you, it's hundreds of years long. Every tribe had its own history, dozens of different epochs in their history, probably hundreds of battles, maybe which we don't know about. So I encourage all of you, if this sparked any curiosity for you, go ahead and do your own research. Anyways, thank you all for listening. Remember that history, you wouldn't be here.